Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Hollywood Casino Press Box, featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Interest level in the Blues and Jets, 7 o'clock tonight. I think I'd give it a 10 because of the excitement. At the end of the season, I couldn't be more thrilled for a series to begin.
Oh, the hockey playoffs are great, too.
What could make you switch away from the Blues game? If I texted you and said there's a deep fly to left, would you switch over? Is that enough to get you to switch the remote?
You can set up a Google alert for topics, so like for President Trump or Cardinals baseball just in general. So you'll get an alert when there's an article about it. Can I set up a Twitter alert for whenever there's a fly ball to left field that I can flip over to Fox Sports
Midwest or a double into the corner?
Yes.
A throw to the cutoff man.
Wow. How about The Athletic had a story yesterday and a panel voted the Blues as the top dark horse to win the cup.
It's a little dangerous. If you're a Blues fan, that makes you nervous.
Yes.
Now, you want to be the dark horse without anybody mentioning it. There's always a reason to be nervous. I just hope Binnington plays well, game win or lose. I hope he plays well so that doesn't open the door. Well, it's his first playoff experience. Oh, is he really ready?
And, you never want to ask who should we put in goal. Yeah. In this series.
Correct.
You want Binnington to start every game.
Correct. And you want to win, but I definitely need him to play well tonight, win or lose, just so there's no debate moving forward, like he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I know we'll all be prisoner of the moment, people, overreacting after one game, but just imagine if it does happen where you are you're down 1-0 and he does get lit up. All of a sudden, all this momentum. I don't think that's happening.
No, I think based on what we've seen, they'll play. Their problem was always playing poorly against the bad teams. And now that you're in the playoffs, you're going to face nothing but good teams. I mean, the dream scenario, I would think, is that Nashville gets knocked out, you beat Winnipeg, and then advance possibly hosting a round in the second round. I mean, that's getting way ahead of the game. I know we're going to talk to Curbs at 11:45. Also, 622 Blue, who will hear none of this negativity. Strick will be here in the 12 o'clock hour, so a lot of Blues talk. 7 o'clock start tonight. The 8:30 on Friday, I don't mind that because it's Friday night.
Yes.
No Cardinal game.
And you're not anchoring that night, so you don't care if nobody's going to be watching you.
Correct.
And you will not be supporting Zach because you'll be watching the game. You're not going to turn
flip
over.
Flip over as quick as I can, of course. Cardinals are off on Friday. It's a weird deal. They're playing in Monterrey, Mexico, and I don't know how many people are even aware of that. It doesn't really matter. You're not going to the game. But it is kind of a weird deal. I don't know if MLB set this up or if the Reds said, listen, we don't really sell a lot of tickets. Let's just take a game down to Monterrey, Mexico. That's kind of a weird deal. They're playing there Saturday and Sunday. But Blues level of excitement, it is for sure.
And
I think off the charts.
There's something else going on this weekend. It's called the Masters. And joining us now is the former Masters champion, the great Bob Golby. Bob, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm real good. Thank you, Frank. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you great. So last night,
I'm a little low. I can barely hear you.
All right. See if you can bring me up just a little bit. Bob, tell our listening audience what you did last night in Augusta, Georgia.
Well, there was 32 players, former winners, and they have their annual dinner. And the defending champion pays for dinner. We had a bone-in steak. It was really big and really good, and we had cream corn and Brussels sprouts. Everybody didn't eat them, but I love them. They were good, and some wonderful potatoes, and then had a good dessert and some expensive wine. It was a wonderful night, and of the 50-some years that I've been going to that dinner, there was more participation by some of the players than there's ever been. Normally, I'm a little disappointed in the guys did not join in. Seems like they're all tired from playing practice rounds, but this year they all joined in and told a lot of stories, and it was just a lot of fun last night. That's the most fun I've had in the last 51 years at that dinner.
Hey, Bob, what is the format? Do players just randomly stand up and start talking? Is there any sort of structure to the program? And give us an idea maybe who did speak, some of the players, some of the names that stood up and talked.
Well, the chairman of the tournament, and he speaks first. He's the only outsider. The rest of them in there are all former champions are present champions. And then Ben Crenshaw is sort of the maitre d' or the host. And he kind of ramrods a little talking. And usually the defending champion talks first, and they give him a locket with Bobby Jones and Cliff Roberts' picture on it and some inscription about the Masters. It's a beautiful piece of jewelry. And they presented that to Michael Reed. And anyway, it was that's what they do. And then anybody can say anything they want. And usually they don't say too much. But this time everybody joined in, and it seemed like it was a little more camaraderie-ship this year than normal.
Bob, you actually have become friendly with Tiger Woods, and he knew about your career, which really impressed you. Tell me about that.
Well, a lot of times you introduce yourself to the new champion, and they look at you like glassy eye and like say, who the hell are you, you know? And Tiger, when I introduced myself a few years back, he said, I know who you are, Bob. You won in 1968, and he reeled off what else I'd done. And I was double impressed with the fact that he had a lot of facts about all the players in his mind, and he was impressive when I was introduced to him the first time at that dinner. And since then, I've become semi-friendly with him. I see him a couple times a year, but he always goes out of his way to come over and talk. Maybe it's small talk or chit-chat, but still, he makes an effort to come over and talk. He's a nice man. I know he got kind of crucified with the girl situation where he had those girls, but he was young and he was living a big high-fluting life, and I think he's calmed down 100% since then.
Bob, what's the green jacket situation? I'm sure you've told me and Frank about it before, but they keep it. When do you get to wear it? How often?
Well, I'm wearing it right now. I'm sitting on the veranda outside the locker room, and we just wear it on the ground. It stays there, and they put it in your locker when the tournament comes, and you can wear it wherever you want around the club. And that's the same thing with the regular members. I'm an honorary member, but we do get to wear the jacket here, and that's kind of a symbol, the green jacket. You know, everybody kind of envies a green jacket because it's gotten a lot of publicity over the last 75 years, and more so now than ever since Tiger came along, and everybody's interested in Tiger. You know, the tickets on the black market are going higher than they've ever done around here. They can't believe the prices they're getting, and it's basically because Tiger's back in his game a little bit, and they all want to see Tiger win. He's one of those guys that people caught on watching. Sometimes a good player never catches on, but Tiger's done that just the opposite. They all kind of love Tiger, and they all want to watch him.
Bob, in terms of winning this tournament, a lot of people think it could be Justin Rose. He's been playing great. The McIlroy would be the career Grand Slam. Everybody talking about Tiger. Is there a name that we should keep an eye on that you like their chances this weekend?
Well, I kind of like Justin Thomas. He has a game that can win here. He's long. It's a high ball, and they've made this course tougher and tougher. Number five is almost a stroke harder this year. They've bought some property and moved the tee way back. Used to be a hard hole where it was, and it's about 70 yards longer. So it's going to be a green that's going to be bogeyed way more than made pars. There'll be very few birdies ever made on number five now. So that's going to make the scores go up at least a stroke around number five. It's going to be hard. But there are a lot of birdie holes on this course. The par fives are reachable. They got a little danger around them, some creeks and the lakes in front of them, but if they're holding after the rain, they had a long lot of rain yesterday, so the greens will be holding for 2 or 3 days, which makes the course a little easier. When the greens get real firm and bounce, the ball bounces over and down the creeks, it's a hard golf course, but it'll play a little easier for tomorrow's round and Friday. And then by the weekend, I'm sure it'll get firm again and get a little harder.
Bob Gulby, the 1968 Masters champion on 590 The Fan, Martin Kilcoyne and Frank Cusumano. Bob, do you remember the first time you walked those grounds at Augusta? And even though you're a former champion, you have access to the club and the green jacket, is there still something special when you show up on those grounds?
Well, I played Sunday. And, yes, it's not just a regular round of golf. It's there. It's kind of it's almost like hallowed ground to be here. They build it up with the press so much over the year. So you're excited even as a guy that's played 50-some years ago. I get excited, and I played Sunday here, and it was fun. Didn't seem to get too tired because it was a great golf course, and you like to see the changes they've made. They're constantly making slightly changes that you can hardly tell. As a fellow like myself who's been here that many years, I could see a little different, but most of the younger guys, they can't tell the difference because they didn't play certain holes over one or two times before they may have changed the contour of the green. But the golf courses run fast. They cut the fairways short. There's plenty of room off the tee, but you have to drive pretty – you have to get your drive in position so you can hit your second shot because the greens are very undulated, and they put pins in places you can't get to unless you're the right or left, right side of the fairway where you can shoot at the pin without burying it in a bunker. It takes a little knowledge. I know when I won, the average guy had been here 9 years, winner. But Fuzzy Zeller won in his first time, and it's gotten a lot less now. People have won in their second or third year. But they also get to play here a lot more as an amateur, and they learn the course so that the younger guys are more seasoned, even though they're age-wise, they're not very old. Like Spieth and Justin Thomas, they're still under 25, and they've already won big tournaments, and they're already on their way to the Hall of Fame. But it's a great place, and I've been honored to have won here and gone to 51 dinners, and I've enjoyed every moment of this tournament.
Thank you, Bob. Honored to have you on the program. We appreciate it, sir.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Bob Golby, 90 years old, playing golf on Sunday. Let's switch topics. We are headed to Winnipeg. The voice of the Blues, Chris Kerber, joining us now. Chris, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Frank, I'm doing well. How are you today?
Everything's great. The Blues are on the ice as we speak. Anything to observe right off the bat?
No, it looks like the same lineup as they pretty much ended the regular season with. Bennington will be in goal. Bozak is good, ready to go. It looks like Joel Edmondson will be on a pairing with Robert Bortuzzo based on the way they rolled the lines here this morning. And I think you need that size in this series. So lineup seems pretty much ready to go.
And would you guess, Curbs, it's impossible. I know you can't forecast a series, but you see this anyway that, it's going a long ways, isn't it? 6-7 game. In terms of their matchup, in terms of how even they are, both ended with 99 points. Do you forecast a long series?
I don't. You know what? I guess I'm going to waver a little bit, I don't know how the series is going to go, guys. But what I'll tell you is, I envision even if one team were to sweep the other one, I'd expect it to be grueling. But yeah, this is the kind of series that you could expect to go a long way because of the way the Blues have played defensively and the way that the Winnipeg Jets have played in their last 30 games. I'm not sure how much stock to put into it. I guess you have to rely on the fact that this is the Winnipeg Jets are a team that's been one game below 500 in their last 30 games. The one thing that I know that they do, guys, is they give up some goals. The biggest difference, I think, between the Winnipeg Jets this year and last year is they give up more goals this year than they have. You know, in seven of their last nine games, they've allowed three or more goals. And this series could be the race to three. You know, the St. Louis Blues in all but three games, I think, scored that they won this year, scored three goals, something along those lines. The Jets are very similar. So the race to three, to me, this series is going to come down to the battle in front of the net. Who wins the blue paint? Who wins the 2-foot, 4-foot battle in front of the goal on the defensive side and on the offensive side? And the reason I say the defensive side is while the Winnipeg Jets are a team that do create more chances off the rush, it's not that they score a lot off the rush. They score a lot on those second chances and the chaos they create in front of the net. Well, the Blues are defending much differently and better than they were going through the month of December, the last time they played these two teams. So I'm going to be real curious to see how that plays out here in game number one.
One of the stories today is a writer dug up some old tweets of Jordan Binnington when he was 18 years old. I know you haven't had a chance to talk with Jordan yet because they're on the ice. I'm sure he's going to be asked about it. Your thoughts?
I think that writers like this are the scum of the earth right now, that media members like this are the scum of the earth. I really do. I can't stomach them. And it's not just because it's Jordan Binnington. I mean, whether it was whether it's a, you know, the pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers or whatever. You know, you're taking grown men that did not grow up in the age of social media and trying to apply the rules that you had, you know, that are now to kids from then. And I'm dumbfounded on this. And then, you know, and then I know some tweets about Jack Roslovic have now surfaced, and I don't think that it's going to happen. What's amazing about this is, you know, the tweets that surfaced on Jordan Binnington was done by a writer that covers the San Jose Sharks that actually is from Winnipeg. I mean, guys, Frank, Martin, we all have kids. We all have kids that have grown up in the social media world. You have to teach your kids as you go, and that's what we're doing. To sit there and make a big deal out of this, I think he's going to address it. He'll address it maybe with one answer and then move on to hockey. I just the state that we're in, where the media feels like it's our job to basically tear people down, is so disgusting to me. And everybody in the media that doesn't condemn this kind of crap, you know, to me is complicit in it. It's time to start as members of the media, as reporters, as broadcasters, as writers, as newsmen like you guys are. It's no longer about the sensationalist of the headline. You've got to dig a little bit deeper and find out what the person's about. And then when you realize that we're actually going to start railroading guys because of what they were as kids, I can't stomach that anymore. It absolutely hacks me off, and shame on anybody that believes that this is the role of the media. You know, and I'm not saying that just because Jordan Binnington is now in the middle of some of it. I felt this way with the Milwaukee pitcher. Like, it's an absolute joke, and frankly, we should demand more of ourselves.
Yeah, well stated.
I don't know if that's the answer you were looking
for.
I'm pretty passionate about that.
Well, 1,000%. And then the thing that I said to the guy, I don't know if he's a blogger or whatever he is, and I'd meant to do this earlier, but while we're talking, I just tweeted it out because his thing said, I came across. So I just simply said, please define came across, because you don't just... Oh, I came across a Binnington tweet from 2013. I'm sorry, my ass. You don't just come across a tweet. And I didn't know the kid was from, or person, human, whatever.
Guys,
from Winnipeg.
Realize, and if you scroll down, like, if you log onto somebody's social media site, you got to wait for that screen to refresh 10 times just to get to the end of last week.
Right.
Much less seven years ago. But here's what can be done. You know, you guys have a radio show. There's opportunities. Have producers reach out to them, call them, try and get them on the air, and have them answer that question. I mean, I think that there should be some ways that go ahead and answer the question. How did you? It's a great question mark. How did you come across it? But let's just say, for the sake of it, and let's say you did come across something like that. All right, you've got a job, and your job as a reporter, as a member of the media, is then, do I have a story here? You have to ask that question. Not do I have a headline, do I have a story? And to do that, you got to dig a little bit deeper. In this case, you call the person and you ask the person, what was up when you did this? You know, and you might find that you do have a story. You might find that you don't. My guess is, when we're dealing with kids, more times than not, you're going to find out that you don't. And guys, look, I mean, every single person in this world has done something stupid, said something stupid. The difference is we might have been lucky enough not to have to grow up in the social media world. And by the way, when I say that, I'm not even saying that some of this stuff is stupid. Some of this is growing up. And God, I hate the fact, and I feel so bad for kids that this kind of pressure and this kind of stuff is on them on that basis, man. It makes me sick to my stomach. Shame on this guy. Shame on McIntyre, the Winnipeg writer. And shame on anybody that doesn't, you know, get more vocal to put an end to this crap. It fires me up.
You know, Chris, I don't know Jordan Binnington as well as you do, but in the times I've been around him, maybe like 10 or 15, I get the impression that this may become a little bit of a story here, but he has the personality to just put it away and get locked in and put on a great performance tonight.
100% right, Frank. I have no doubt in that. You know, we'll go into the room here in just a couple of minutes as they're you know, broken off from the main drills on at the morning skate here. But I get the sense from talking to some of the media people around here. Of course, I just had a conversation with Jim Thomas and Luke Korak, and you know, and covering it as well on the columnist side, and they're that same way. And, you know, I said this to those guys. I said, you know, you guys have an interesting role in this. And I go, well, does the story get exacerbated? Does it get put to bed? Or do you guys actually hold your own member accountable? Because I'll tell you this. If this was a broadcaster for the Winnipeg Jets that did this, I'd go right over to him and look at him and say, you know what, you're full of blank, and that's a bunch of blank right there. I go, what if a media member, some part of their own fraternity, will go do that? I mean, at some point, you got to start standing up against this stuff, and not just because it's part of this team or whatever. Like, this has got to start. Like, at some point, aren't average people getting a little bit tired of this kind of stuff because you're applying standards that don't make sense? I don't get it, but Jordan Binnington is one of those guys I think he'll be just fine, and can't wait to see him go. I'm loving the way that this kid has handled everything so far, and I think he's going to handle it extremely well, and you know, and he'll have the right support from the team, as he should.
You know, Chris, we talk a lot about Patrick Laine. He does seem to score every time he plays the Blues, but everything we've heard, and we had their play-by-play guy on the other day, he hasn't done much outside of the Blues and outside of the power play. What do you see in his game right now? Because I think we think of him as a Blues killer, but his season really tailed off.
Well, he played in four games against the Blues, and if you take away the one game where the Blues were so bad defensively on him, he had the five goals. He actually only had 2 points in the other three games. He had a goal and an assist total in the other three games. He's still a young player, guys, that's still trying to figure it out on a consistent basis in the NHL. And, yes, he's a budding superstar and should be. He's got all the talent there. But he only had 9 goals in his final 60 games of the regular season. So the playoffs are a different beast. So for some people it's a fresh start, and they can go absolutely nuts. Jeff O'Neill, for example, did it with Carolina, you know, in Carolina's great run, and you know, 10 years ago. Like the different reality is, but if you're the St. Louis Blues, they're just defending better. They're defending differently. They're defending harder in front of the net. I don't expect them to be able to get open that much. So, he's got all the skill in the world, Martin, to be an absolute factor. But the Blues are playing better to help make sure that Patrick Laine feels like it's still the regular season for him.
Chris, excluding Jordan Binnington, who will be the most important player for the Blues in this series?
Well, guys, it's the playoffs. Your best players have got to be your best players. When Colorado was going on the run, they did it because guys like Forsberg, Sakic, you know, Bjorkfoot, and Wah, right? So I hang that on all the key players. I hang that on the Petrangelos, on the Tarasenkos of this team. I'm going to tell you, though, I think a key to this series could be Jaden Schwartz. And he did not have – I mean, he probably had, I think, in terms of expectations versus reality, maybe the most disappointing season amongst the Blues forwards. But Jaden Schwartz can be an absolute difference maker, and it needs to be. You know, in terms of controlling the puck, not turning it over, and then burying the chances. And if he does, he can be a swingman in this series without a shred of doubt in my mind. So I think I'll say the swingman in the series for me could be number 17.
And I think it was Darren Pang who told Frank the other day that he talked to Craig Berube and said, this time of year, any different rules? You want us to help in any way? What else can we do? And he said, nope. I get the sense Craig Berube's going to be exactly – I mean, I think some managers in baseball, coaches in other sports, they get a little tight. They start to change kind of what they do. I don't get the sense Berube will do anything different.
Guys, in 2009, Andy Murray put the team on a bus away from the rink in Vancouver and took a team that didn't know any better, that they shouldn't be playing that well, that went from last in the West all the way to the sixth seed. And he put them on a bus to rework a power play. And at that point, and this is coming from the guys that were on that team, you know, all of a sudden they're like, ooh, something's different here. This is different than what we've been doing. And everybody tightened up. I can tell you in the last few days, I haven't gotten that sense one bit from this team. And as a matter of fact, I'm pretty impressed with having been in the room and around his team here since the regular season ended, and it's so much business as usual. I'm seeing the same interaction on the ice, seeing the same interaction with how they're handling the media. I'm seeing the same thing, and I think that's Craig Berube's approach there, which is very positive.
Great stuff. Honored to have you on the program. We will be listening tonight. Thank you so much.
You got it, guys. Have a great morning. We'll talk to you before game 2 on Friday.
All right. That is Chris Kerber, and he is the voice of the Blues, and he comes to us via our good friends –
folks at Petromart,
yes,
Phillips 66. I know all around town, proud sponsors of the Blues all season long. And the Kerber Reports with Martin and Frank brought to you by Petromart.
That each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next. With 50 locations to serve you in a hurry, Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items like hot and ready pizza or fresh fruit and salads. Petromart is something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. Petromart, a proud supplier of Phillips 66 gasoline and proud sponsor of the Blues.
That's teamwork.
That is. Sorry, I should have texted that
I
to
lost
you.
The puck for a split second. Martin picked it up.
I just bounced it off the boards.
Good. Although Martin,
Frank was down in the corner. He had a lower body injury, I think. Or was it upper body? He was using his hands. It was an upper body.
Everything. Wrist, two assists and a goal. Yeah.
But during the interview, when Chris complimented one of my things, I had my arms up, Brian gave me credit, and then Martin said, no,
he did, he didn't say, good question, great question. He just said, oh, yeah, 1,000%, 100%, whatever. He was agreeing with you. He didn't say,
all right,
great question.
We're getting a lot of play for Curbs' great thoughts on the social media.
Splashback,
that was great.
It.
Good for him.
Yeah, it was a great rant. I'm glad he said it. And to be honest, as we begin the day, I'm sure on the TV side, the radio side, I'm not sure what I think about. I know what I think about. I think it's stupid. And I think this guy in San Jose says, and I saw it late that last night, I came across these. And that's why I thought I should have done this earlier. I said, while Curbs is on the rant, I tweeted out to the guy, please define came across, because obviously he was looking to dig something up. But I don't even know how to go about it because I don't want to give it more credence. But people are talking about, you know what I'm saying? You want to ignore it, but you just ignored a huge story.
Well, and what bothered me is also the guy said he'd be getting crushed if he played in the Bay Area. Like, no, shut up. There's neighborhoods in San Francisco right now that crowdsourced legal fees to stop a homeless shelter being built near them. Do not play the card that you're morally superior than anyone else in the country.
And yeah, he's a San Jose beat writer, so it's
from
not,
Winnipeg.
Not
interesting,
shocking.
Interesting sidebar from Curbs that guy is actually from Winnipeg.
You know, look at the demographics.
He's got a double down on this one.
Look at the demographics of Silicon Valley, and tell me that you're more inclusive. It's just not the case.
I was feeling it.
I hate provincialism. And,
that's
what this is.
So that was an added layer to him just kind of trying to poke the bear, stir it up a little bit.
Oh, you wouldn't handle an athlete
West
like that.
Coast
well,
elitist.
Andrew Bogut plays for the Warriors. Look at what he's tweeted about. And tell me why he's still playing for them.
I think if you're Doug Armstrong or Craig Berube, your first reaction is, oh, God. Like, you don't need this. And for those who don't know, I would say the comments, he's about 18 or 19. Insensitive to people.
He makes a couple comments about burkas.
Burkas, so, yeah. And so that, like going through security at the airport says, how do you know
well,
when they're
wear
wearing a burka?
Or just wear a burka to a bar. They'll never know how old you are. And yes, you should not mock religious garments of any kind.
The comments are insensitive.
Yeah. I've heard you say derogatory things about the wife beater shirts that I wear. That
Italian.
Yeah.
to be fair, if we're not sitting
in
St. Louis.
Don't put that in our culture, Frank.
Yeah, but I didn't tweet it, so you can't prove it.
On the level of insensitivity, I'm sorry, this is not off the charts, okay? It's an unfortunate comment or two that makes him sound kind
when
of foolish.
When he was 18. Yes.
Right. I'm just saying.
God, could you imagine all the things you could get in trouble for with what you've expressed when you were 18 years
sincerely,
old?
Sincerely, I didn't get on the Twitter till I was 21, and I'm very, very thankful I did not have a social media outlet like that when I was in high school and even early in college.
It really is, and I'm not dismissing any ill – you know, any hurt feelings that the old tweets may still foster. But on the whole, it's much to do about nothing.
Speaking of the Sopranos, can somebody please explain how Tony gets so many attractive women? I know
power.
He's a power guy, but still, in the end, every woman that's really stunningly attractive loves him, and he breaks up with them, and they just want more and more
power and money. That's how it is. I mean, none of the male characters in The Sopranos are attractive, and they all have.
That's exactly what he said.
And they all have attractive women. Yeah. I mean, I love Paulie Walnuts. He's just kind of a weird-looking old guy. Sylvia Dante is a weird-looking person.
Ooh, Sylvia's really bad.
Some of them are kind of big and portly, but they all have attractive.
Some of them.
Every three episodes, Tony's got this new, stunningly attractive woman.
Are they being paid to be with him?
Well, some of them are paid to work for him.
I'm just wondering if they're.
Oh, well, yeah. I wouldn't call that a relationship, though.
At the restaurant.
Meanwhile, Frank's watching the bottom being like, what kind of food do they serve there?
God, the food in that show is so good, though.
How about Bob Golby sounding like Frank? Yeah. We're talking about the Green Jacket in Augusta, and he's like, boy, we had a bone-in ribeye. We had cream corn. And he's like, no, I love the Brussels sprouts. Not everybody likes them, but I had a whole plate.
We need to break it down the menu.
We need to get Frank on the Golf Channel so he could do like a live fit from Augusta, and they ask him about golfers, but every answer relates back to the food the night before at the champion's dinner.
How about our...
Right, so there it was, six pimento and cheese is deep.
One of our sports producers, Roman Duenas, has had this trip planned. His brother-in-law is taking him to the Masters. He's there this week. He's a golf fan, and he's never gone. And they're going to spend Tuesday through Sunday in the area going to Augusta. But he's also a Texas Tech grad. So last week I said, you got to go to the Final Four. And then they get to the championship game. I'm like, you got to go. You're a Texas Tech grad. He said, I can't. I'm already going to Augusta. Can you imagine that? Your alma mater is in the national championship game for the first time ever. And you're thinking, I really need to be there. I can't because I have a once-in-a-lifetime trip to Augusta. That's when you need Jim Nantz to just come and pick you up. And how about Tony Bennett, who tried to strong-arm Nantz on national TV into a round of golf at Augusta? Did you?
That's right. Maybe get my dad and myself
on CBS. Hey, Jim, you know, my dad, I told my tag him in Augusta. What do you say?
I don't think he needs Jim Nantz's help now. I think you've just won a national championship. You could probably play a round at Augusta. All right, a couple of business items. Dr. Michael Jones, he is the official eye surgeon of the Hollywood Casino Press Box. He's with Quantum, 866-260-EYES. He practices on both sides of the river, 866-260-EYES. He's the best at what he does. I promise you, if you get those, get that LASIK surgery done, your eyes will be fixed forever. 866-260-EYES. And also Hollywood Casino, the place to watch sporting events. You can watch the Cardinals in Mexico this weekend, the Blues in Winnipeg on Friday night. You can be at 99 Hops House with all those beers, all that great food. Hollywood Casino, one of our great sponsors. What do we have coming up in the 12 o'clock coveted hour?
Strick is here. Yeah. More Blues breakdown. Let's do this. Blues game one tonight. Strick is here. We'll take your text, which means we're actually going to read them at 855-282-8255. It's the coveted hockey hour next.